We need to do a much better job of lifting people up and identifying great things when they're happening.
Well, you know that learning happens everywhere. So how do we tackle this idea of ecosystems?
In their previous conversation titled From Recovery to Coherence, Implementation, Relationships, and the Conditions for Learning, Sarah Walfin and Rob Jagers make clear that post-COVID recovery is not failing due to a lack of evidence, but because our systems remain fragmented and underaligned. They show how strategies that work in theory falter in practice when schools lack the relational, organizational, and cross-sector conditions required to sustain learning. Their analysis moves us beyond the language of learning loss toward a deeper question: what does it actually take to build coherent learning ecosystems that support development across settings and over time? Sarah Rodriguez followed that conversation in a session entitled From Engagement to Partnership, Sharing Power in Learning Ecosystems. She brought the question down to the level of lived experience. She illustrates how coherence cannot be built without rethinking power, how families, youth, and community organizations are too often positioned as recipients rather than as co-creators. Her work demonstrates how to treat community voice as infrastructure and why trust, reciprocity, and shared decision-making are not add-ons, but essential conditions for equity and impact. In the conversation that follows, Joe Bishop and Karen Pittman connect in roughly two 30-minute parts. Walfin and Jagers focus on coherence and implementation, with Rodriguez's insistence on partnership and power, arguing that learning and development unfold within ecosystems that are only as strong as the relationships that hold them together. Their exchanges challenge us to move past isolated programs and short-term recovery efforts towards a more intentional architecture, one that aligns schools, communities, and systems around trust, belonging, and shared responsibility for learning 365 days a year. Joe and Karen, thank you for joining us. Both of you have done really important work in supporting school and community transformation. The first question I want to ask is to Joe. In terms of the work that you and the center have done in supporting transformation of schools, what have you learned, Joe, that is relevant to this moment, and how is this moment different?
David, thank you for having me. I would say, when we think about transformation, the common denominator that has not changed in education is relationships. When you document in our work, so I started and lead the Center for the Transformation of Schools at UCLA in the School of Education and Information Studies. A lot of what we do is applied research, documenting, elevating, highlighting good work. Also looking at populations that historically have been underserved, young people who have not been served well, and to help school leaders and policymakers think about how do we change systems. But what I will say is when you dig in, when you do site visits, when you meet with school leaders, what is always very apparent is places where there are trusted adults and young people believe the adults in the room care about them. And that permeates throughout an entire school. And when you're talking about a school system, I think what we found is that it can be harder to find the right teams of people across an entire system, especially large systems. So I think our work and our research at UCLA has documented the complexities of implementation around transformation. And it also has looked at how agencies and people are working in ways that they haven't done before to support young people in health, human services, child welfare, education. And I think what strikes me is not only that relationships matter, but also the notion that people often are doing transformational work, but don't call it that because they see that as their bigger professional duty in life, and they just do it naturally. And I think in education as a whole, we need to do a much better job of lifting people up and identifying great things when they're happening. So that's my long-winded response to your question, David.
That's not a long-winded one. It's a very important one, Joe. And Karen, you also have both worked in communities supporting transformation and worked with school systems supporting transformation. How is your experience similar or different from what Joe was talking about?
David, I agree with everything that Joe has said. And I think it's really important that this idea of relationships is coming front and center into how schools think about how they really can engage young people more generously and more specifically to just speak to their interests and talents. But what I've been doing over the past 10 years in particular is spending a lot of time sitting at tables with people like you all who are thinking about school transformation. And I've been sitting there from the perspective of youth development. So I'm often the token youth development person in the room, sitting with people who are thinking about school transformation. And as we've come closer to recognizing the importance of the idea that learning is social emotional, and that anything that we're doing to support learning has to start with the fact that young people have to feel that they belong and that they're accepted and that they can be themselves in that space. We've seen after school programs and after and out of school programs, after school and summer programs, really come into their own in terms of also recognizing the importance that they play, the important role they play in people's lives. But what I've seen over the past 5 years, certainly since the pandemic, is that when we have this moment in time in which out of school time was all the time because schools were closed, youth organizations stepped up to fill that space with young people physically and virtually because they live with belonging and relationships. They didn't say, we can't teach you. They said, we will help you. And I was hopeful that as we came out of the pandemic, that those older relationships between school and community organizations would stay a little more balanced, that the value of seeing how young people could use their youth organizations as home bases for learning could stay in place. But unfortunately, that's shifted back. So what I've been doing over the past couple of years in really sitting closely with folks that are really on the edge of thinking about school transformation is to remind them that the language of school and out of school gives an artificial barrier between school and community. And even the language of ecosystems that we're all using now, we know young people want to have open-walled, learner-based, learner agency, competency-based, real-life learning. All these wonderful terms about deeper learning are great. And the transformation that's happening in the school day is wonderful. And we've got lots of great examples of that. But the one thing that we haven't tackled is the fact that the school day and school year itself hasn't changed. We're trying to do all this wonderful transformation still inside the traditional box of 9 to 3, September and June, K-12 education. But we know that learning happens everywhere. So how do we tackle this idea of ecosystems? And what we've been doing with the Alliance for Youth Thriving is to say, we have to recognize that the other systems in the learning ecosystem. It's not just that young people go to school and they have this natural group of people around them who can support their learning in a sort of organic way. So they go to school and the school, when they leave school, they go to other organizations. They go to libraries, museums, youth organizations, summer camps, employment and training centers, recreation centers. They go to places where there are people who are trained to support their interest-driven learning. And those people have challenges, but they don't start with the challenges that are facing schools, which is how do we get out of the old rubber of schooling? And so what we have been saying is we have to say, if we're going to create a new architecture for learning, as we come back out of the pandemic, we have to think about how that architecture is not just supporting the whole child and not just recognizing the whole community, but actually looking at all of the adults that are paid to work with young people in classrooms and outside of classrooms in the school. Look at all the adults who are paid in the community to work with young people in all these different buildings where young people spend their time and in between them, and say, how can we really take, build an architecture that supports 360 degrees, 365 days a year, up to age 25 learning, and making that box for school bigger, making that box for learning bigger, to be year-round, all day, throughout adolescence as a bigger box. It allows schools to say, we can come to the table with other organizations, with other systems, and understand how they have tackled our problems in a way that we can work together. And we're finding that just putting up the roles that they're there. You've got counselors, you've got teachers, yes, you've got paraprofessionals, you've got librarians, you've got social workers, you've got nurses, you've got youth organizers, you've got civil leaders. All these people have different approaches to young people. And that's how we really can build this whole, get this learning ecosystem to be more equitable. So the idea that school maintains its core functions that we've all relied on as safe, supportive places where people can go, but we partner differently to think about how we build competencies, how we build real-world experiences, and how we can give people credit for learning where they really are learning and support those organizations.
I would love for us to actually shift our language slightly to help us. I think we'll get faster if we can recognize the value of high-impact learning experiences wherever they happen. We know what the criteria are that make for exceptional learning. And they're the same criteria whether it's on a sports field, in an algebra class, or in a pottery class, or in an employment training program. They're the same characteristics. And so when we talk about you can learn out of school, that's great, but you're learning in school. If we can just talk about how we create powerful learning experiences and how young people know them when they see them, and teachers know them when they see them, everybody understands it. What we have to get over is the idea that learning isn't boring. We've all been conditioned to think learning is boring. People where they learn, they'd say, well, I learned that in school, but you ask them where they're excited about learning, they tell you all kinds of things, and it doesn't occur to them that the learning that they are happening in school isn't the official learning, isn't the most important learning. You think, I have to sit here and take this in, and then I go out and have fun. And teachers think the same thing.
That's what we're trying to do with the Alliance Youth Thriving. And one thing to do in that space is really focus in on adolescents, which is what we're doing, to say, we've got to help young people move beyond age 18. Too many young people are getting into high school, whether they're getting good grades or not. They're not ready for the real world. We have to help that by giving them more real world experiences.
Joe, when I was listening to your response to the first question and you were talking correctly about the power of relationships, I was thinking from my experience supporting interagency collaboration over time, about the fact that collaboration across an ecosystem really requires the participants in the collaboration to have relationships with each other.
Yep.
And yes. While what I think we know is that in transformative places, there are good relations among the staff and students and leadership, often that's within the school, or often that is within a particular agency. And I wonder if part of the issue is how do we also leverage those relationships across an ecosystem so people come together not just as transactional pieces, but as people who are in relationship with each other.
Yes, I think when I just heard Karen share her thoughts on learning ecosystems, I think she was spot on around the kind of false barriers we set around when people learn and do not learn. And when you think about adult learning, we spend very little time talking about how adults learn from one another. And at the center of that is trust. I think in a lot of spaces, the transactional mindset dominates how we think about, it is dominant in American culture. How is this person going to help me to get from here to there? And even some of our students at UCLA, I'll try to explain to them, like, you don't know how building a relationship with someone now might benefit both of you for the long term. And I think education is no different than most organizations or systems where we have to figure out really this idea of what motivates people to be where they are. And then how do we use that motivation and understanding, even that interest-based learning, as Karen said, to inform how we foster healthy, positive relationships with adults first and foremost, starting with self, to then set the stage for young people who have good models in front of them. And also, frankly, for adults to learn from young people how to build different types of relationships. And I think sometimes we assume that the oldest person in the room has all the skills to build a relationship. And I think when you spend more time with young people, you realize that it actually is never that easy and simple, kind of by design, but you have to make the space for the relationships to happen. And it has to be, a lot of schools will spend the first few weeks with teachers and young people trying to do lessons and exercises of getting to know each other. And that's very intentional because you can't learn in a space where you feel like people don't know you and when you're not, where you don't trust the person next to you. So I think there are some pretty common practices that schools use in the space. But at the end of the day, again, I think helping one another understand that, yes, learning is a social and emotional process of young people, but also adults. And I think we often forget the A word, because we assume adults have all the skills to build those relationships. And often I would say, as an adult myself, sometimes we're the worst model for relationship building.
Yeah. Aaron, do you want to add to what Joe just said?
I just want to emphasize the challenge that we all have, and by all of us, everybody in the United States is operating under a 100-year-old version of what learning is, not just what schools are, but what learning is. And we're kind of, the more we say we need relationships, the more we say we need flexibility, the more we say we need kids to follow their interests, the more we're butting up against this deeply ingrained idea that learning is a one-way transaction where I come in with the content and I give it to you. And that everything that we do that's supporting relationships or helping kids find their interests or go out into the community and explore things is somehow taking away from the important learning. When you look at where learning happens, you know, we did a podcast series a couple of years ago, and I intentionally interviewed folks who were running some of the best learning networks, like Ron Berger from EL Education and David Adams from Urban Assembly, people who really have helped public schools become very vibrant places where learning is happening. So this was not in any way to denigrate those schools. These are excellent schools. And when I asked each of them to bring a young person on to the podcast with them, and in every instance when I said, how are your teachers? I said, my teachers are great. My teachers are wonderful. I have such a great time with my teachers. My teachers care about me. Everything I could want them to talk about their teachers was important. And I said, then I asked the question, who else is important to you in your school, out of your school? And then they answer. I said, teachers are great, but Margarita said, every day I stop by the nurse's office because when I stick my head into her and I say, how are you? And she asks me how I am. I know she's asking about me. She's asking about my homework. She's asking about how I am. And if I'm not doing well, I have a chance to talk to her. I talk to my counselor. I go to the Boys and Girls Club with my family every day after school until 10 o'clock because my parents work. And that's where I have a safe place. We came to the library. They talk about the places in their community. They can be very specific about the kind of support and learning that they're doing in those places. And we need to understand that. So I would say, one of the things that we've got so many studies. Transcendence put out a new study called FINE. You said, when you're asking people how in the school, they say FINE. FINE isn't enough. So they just said, we're going to dig in and asking people what they really think about school. Going into school, they didn't use a Transcend model. What they found was that young people the more we put these positive things in place, the more engaged that people are, the more they're achieving, the more they're building relationships, the more they're confident about going to the next level, whether it's college or a career. All the things we want to happen are happening. But the questions are always compared to other schools. What I've never heard us ask in a survey question is, what are you learning here? And what are you learning when you're not here? If we could just ask the question, what are you learning when you're not with us? We would have much more information about how understanding how learning happens. If we think it's an ecosystem, we should ask about the whole ecosystem and not assume that ecosystem is just school or just the classroom and other things. All of those important networks that I talked about, like EL Education, the first thing that they do is to involve the entire school. EL Education won't even start working with the school until they commit that everybody in the school can go through professional development together. So the first thing we have to do is to say all these roles that we have are in schools. Only half of people's time is spent in the core academic classes. Those other spaces are learning environments in the school that we can use. And when we make those connections, it's a lot easier to talk about how the connections out in the community are there. So breaking down these walls can start with just acknowledging the importance of the other adults in the building and the other spaces in the building. And there's so many examples like Playworks and other things that have really elevated those others, those non-academic, non-classroom spaces, and help those become important spaces. When you look at the people that really think about learning experience design, they say the content of what you want people to learn is only a third of the learning. If you don't design it for the whole person, the learning is not going to happen. The content is the last thing that you pour in after you make the design. And so when you think about how to design really a learning experience, it could be a weekend, it could be 6 weeks, but you're not talking about designing a school, you're talking about designing a contained learning experience, and you want to make sure that it's interest-driven, you want to make sure that it's multidisciplinary, you want to make sure that it's rigorous, you You want to make sure that it's authentic. You want to make sure that it, we know that the characteristics have a good learning experience. And you can give those characteristics to everybody that's working with young people in all these different settings and say, can you find us your best learning experiences and bring us a video of them?
Joe, you seem to have a response.
I've been an active listener. No, but I totally agree with what Karen is sharing, but also thinking about, she got me thinking about that the interface with a student and a nurse at a school site. Really, every profession that interacts with young people has to have a common understanding, not only around the science of learning development, but also learning theory. And even in schools of education, we don't do a great job of teaching or really understanding the learning process. And I think if more adults in any child-facing professions understood what was happening, I think it would give people new tools, including in the medical profession, where people will say that person, their bedside manner isn't very good. And we'll joke about they have no emotional intelligence. But think about a patient. Is a patient going to trust a physician who barely talks to them or genuinely doesn't care about their day? No, it's we typically share how we're really feeling inside with those who are invested in us. And it is across the board. I think we all right now could visualize in our head who's somebody who asked how our day was going and actually genuinely cared. So it's not unique to education, but I think education is really the petri dish from which all things can come if we're really smart about how we use our time and how we allow the space for, in particular, relationships to build and for young people and adults to learn from one another.
The second part of Joe and Karen's discussion is about how we start to move. The session explores what it takes to translate knowledge into aligned practice. Both Joe and Karen will share experiences about how including learners in decision-making significantly impacts the relationships needed in our schools and communities. To access the second part, go to www.knowledge-exchange.net. There you will also discover supporting materials and a list of other podcasts in the series.
There's a